There's an abandoned McDonald's restaurant near my house. It closed down 2 years ago, and the city still hasn't torn it down. I drive by it every day, and the sight always creeps me out. All its windows are broken, and half of the signs have fallen onto the cracked pavement. Most of the walls are covered in graffiti. One day, my brother Victor convinced me to go with him and explore the building. He called it urban exploration. I thought that was an absolutely terrible idea, but I was also really protective of my brother, and I didn't want him to go there alone. So I said I'd go with him, but we'd only be there for 30 minutes maximum. We got to the empty parking lot. Victor was literally shaking with excitement. He told me to wait outside while he went in first. Before I could answer, he ran in. I waited in the parking lot for a long time, but Victor didn't come out. There's no moon that night, so it was too dark for me to see inside the restaurant. I didn't hear anything either. I called out to Victor, but he didn't answer. I knew that something bad must have happened. Maybe there was some dangerous homeless man inside or something. I took a deep breath, turned on the flashlight on my phone, and walked inside. The whole place was empty. I walked over broken glass and piles of trash. I looked in the bathrooms and the kitchen in the back, but I couldn't find signs of Victor anywhere. I was scared, but I was also angry. I thought that Victor was messing with me. This must have been his plan all along. He probably snuck out the back and ran home without telling me. I checked the back door, which was locked, but maybe he found another way out. So I went straight home, expecting to see Victor sitting on the couch. He wasn't there. That's when I got really nervous. I called his friends and asked if they knew where he was. No one did. His best friend Joe, the last person I called, offered to come over and help me look for Victor. He got to our place 10 minutes later, and together, we walked back to the McDonald's to look around. The whole time, he assured me that everything would be okay. I didn't really believe him. We were walking through the main room of the building, looking under tables and behind the counter, when Joe completely froze. I asked him what was wrong, and he said that he heard a noise coming from the back of the building. I didn't hear anything. He told me to wait there and walked into the dark kitchen to look around. He was gone for less than a minute before I heard him scream at the top of his lungs. I jumped over the counter to find him, but when I got into the kitchen, he was gone too. Like Victor, it was like he'd completely disappeared. Then, I heard soft laughter coming from behind the pantry door in the corner. I could tell that it was Victor's laugh. That's when I knew that he was still messing with me and Joe was helping him. I was so angry. I marched to the pantry door and pushed a metal trash can in front of it, trapping them both inside. They started pounding on the other side of the door. Victor and Joe screamed at me to let them out. Victor said, "Chill out, it was just a joke. It wasn't funny." I told them, "I'm not gonna let you out until you apologize." And they didn't. They just laughed again. "Fine," I shouted. "I'm leaving." As they kept laughing, I marched out of there and went back home. I know it was a mean thing to do, but I was angry. I decided to let them sit there for a half hour, and if they still hadn't gotten out, then I'd go back and open the pantry door. The trash can wasn't that big, so they'd probably be able to push their way out anyway. And they both had cell phones, so they could call someone else for help. But when I got back home, I was shocked to see Victor and Joe sitting quietly in the living room. They were staring at the TV, even though it wasn't on. "How'd you get back here before I did?" I asked. They looked at each other. Then, at the exact same time, they said,
We never left.
It was such a weird, unnerving thing to say. I had no idea how to respond. They stared at me for a long moment, their faces blank, and they both smiled. "Just messing with you," Victor said. I left the room after that. I was done dealing with their stupid pranks. For the next few days, Victor kept acting weird. When he wasn't at work, he'd just wander around the house, not saying anything. Every night, Joe would come over and they'd just sit together in silence. I couldn't help but think that they'd both seen something in the pantry, that they'd both been so spooked that they were still in shock. I asked Victor several times if something was wrong, but he'd either ignore my question or he'd mumble, "Why'd you leave us there?" After 4 days of this, I'd had enough. I waited until sunset when Victor got home from work. He was still acting weird, so I told him, "I'm tired of all this. If something's happened to you and your friend at McDonald's, just tell me. Otherwise, I don't want to talk about your stupid prank ever again." "It wasn't a prank," he mumbled, and then he walked into his bedroom. Less than 5 minutes later, my cell phone rang. It was Nadia, Victor's boss. I was glad she called. Maybe she could tell me if he was acting weird at work, too. Before I could say anything, she asked me if I'd seen my brother anywhere. "He just walked into his bedroom," I told her. Then she asked if he was okay. She said that Victor hadn't shown up to work in 4 days. He didn't call or anything. I couldn't believe it. What was going on? I walked into Victor's room to give him the phone so we could talk to his boss. But the room was completely empty. The window was locked from the inside and there was no other exit. I told Nadia I'd call her back. Then, I looked through the entire house and still couldn't find him. It could have been round two of his stupid prank, but I knew in my bones that something very bad was going on. I did the only thing I could think of. I walked back to that empty McDonald's. All alone, I walked through the main door and into the kitchen. The pantry door was still blocked by the trash can. I slowly opened the pantry door and saw Victor and Joe lying on the dirty floor. They looked like they were sleeping. I walked to Victor and shook his shoulder. His head rolled to the side, and I could see that his eyes were glossy and dead. He and Joe had suffocated inside the room. They smelled awful too, like they'd been there for days. I instantly called the police and reported what I saw. I was too freaked out to stay inside, so I met the officers in the parking lot. They asked me a bunch of questions, but I honestly didn't know how to answer. If they'd been there this whole time, then who was in my house? A few weeks ago, my boyfriend Sam broke up with me out of nowhere. We'd been together for 3 years, and I always thought we were happy. I thought he loved me. But as soon as I got home from work, he told me to pack up my stuff and leave. He said it wasn't working between us. I tried to talk with him, but he wouldn't get more specific than that. I was so angry, I rushed out of there with no idea where to go. I didn't bring anything with me. There was a McDonald's near his apartment, so I decided to stop there for some food and to figure out my next steps. It was the only place nearby that was still open at this time of night. The only other customer there was an old lady sitting by herself. She was fat, wearing a loose dress and a big flower hat. She looked very motherly. She waved at me, but I was too distracted by my own problems to wave back. I placed my order, and as I went to sit down, the old woman gestured for me to join her. I didn't feel like talking with anyone, but I thought it would be awkward to ignore her since we were the only two people in the restaurant. So I sat across from her. She smiled at me and said her name was Doris. She said that I looked like I could use some company. And just like that, I told her my whole sad story. I don't know why I did it. I guess she just seemed so compassionate, like she was genuinely worried about me. When I finished, she said, "It's okay. Things will work out in the end." Then, she started asking me questions about Sam. It felt like she wanted to help me figure out why my boyfriend would kick me out without an explanation. Pretty soon, my food came. That's when I realized that Doris didn't have any food of her own. She noticed my confusion and explained that she already finished. Now she was just here to cheer me up. It was a really nice thing to say. Then, her expression got dark, and she asked me if I wanted to get revenge on Sam. I laughed and said, "Obviously." Doris stood up, hugged me, and left. She didn't say anything else. It was all very strange. After that, I ended up staying with my sister Emily for the night. The next day, I called Sam to ask if I could pick up my stuff. I hoped that maybe he changed his mind and it would ask me to come back, but he didn't answer his phone. So I drove back home and figured I'd just talk to him in person. When I got there, the house was empty. Sam was probably out celebrating his new single life. I gathered up as much of my stuff as I could, and was about to leave when I noticed something strange on the dining room table.
It was a big flowered hat, the same hat that Doris had worn the night before. Chills ran through me. This didn't make any sense. I took one more look throughout the house. Besides the hat, nothing was out of the ordinary. I told myself it was just some weird coincidence, and I left. After that, I settled into my new life at my sister's. A few days went by, and I still hadn't heard anything from Sam. I couldn't stop thinking about him. I couldn't stop thinking about that stupid hat. I eventually went to Sam's work to finally get some answers. He wasn't there either. His boss told me that he'd sent her a text saying that he was quitting. It didn't seem like something he'd do. He loved that job. I was becoming more and more certain that Doris had done something to Sam. I couldn't think of any other explanation. I even went back to his house one more time. Of course, he wasn't there. But I noticed that his car was still in the garage. That's when I called the police to report a missing person. I told them everything. I even described what Doris looked like. The officer I talked to didn't believe me. He said he'd look into it, but I could tell that he wasn't going to do anything. The only thing left to do was to go back to McDonald's and hope that Doris was there again. I was supposed to meet my sister for dinner, but I canceled and went back to find Doris. She wasn't there, but the same woman was working at the counter. Even though she was busy serving customers, I asked her if she could help me. I started to explain that I'd been there a week before, and she cut me off. "I remember you," she said. "You were the girl sitting in the back of the restaurant talking to yourself." "No," I told her. "I was with an old lady. She had a big flowered hat." The girl shook her head. "No, you were alone. I definitely remember that. It kind of freaked me out." I didn't understand. She had to have seen the old woman sitting with me. I didn't know what else to say though, so I thanked her for her time and left. When I got back to Emily's house, she was waiting for me on the porch. She was smoking a cigarette, which is something she did when she was upset. I asked her what was wrong, instantly worried that this had something to do with Sam's disappearance. She started yelling at me. She said that I was a terrible house guest. She was mad that I'd canceled on our dinner. She said that I'd been rude to her from the moment I moved in. I had no idea she felt that way. I guess I was so preoccupied with Sam's disappearance that maybe I didn't realize how I was coming across. Looking back, I guess she was right. I was being an ungrateful sister who only cared about myself. I promised her that I'd stop thinking about Sam and start acting more interested in her life. I apologized for missing our dinner. She said that she had fun without me. She met a nice woman who was also eating alone, so they ended up talking for a while. She said that the woman was a good listener, especially as she vented about her frustrations with me. My blood instantly ran cold. "Was her name Doris?" I asked. "How did you know?" Emily asked. "Did she say anything about getting revenge?" Emily nodded. "Yeah, but we were just joking." "Why?" I had no idea what to say after that. It's been 3 days since my sister met Doris. I can't eat. I can't sleep. I live in constant fear that the old woman will find me, and that she'll do the same thing to me that she did to Sam. I have no idea what to do or how to protect myself. The first time I saw him, I'd been no older than 7. I was playing in the ball pit at our local McDonald's play place, along with some other kids my age. My mom was sitting at one of the tables with my baby sister, only half keeping an eye on me as she finished eating her food. One by one, the kids left the ball pit as their families called them back, till I was the only one left, pretending to swim through the ocean of rainbow-colored plastic balls. I didn't see him entering the ball pit. I didn't hear him either, and it was hard to stay quiet. I just turned around, and he was there. "Oh," I muttered in surprise, blinking at the boy. He must have been around my age, with short brown hair and pale skin. There was something almost sad about the way he looked. And beneath the bright lights of the play area, there was something hollow about his face. "Hello," I said, thinking that perhaps he needed a friend. The boy looked at me, his expression blank. "Hi." "My name's Josh," I continued, always eager to make new friends. What's yours? Instead of answering me, the boy just shrugged. I remember thinking that was odd. Didn't he know his own name? Instead of dwelling on it, I asked him if he wanted to play, and he nodded. After a few minutes, I grew tired of the ball pit and began to climb out. Let's go play on the slide instead, I suggested, but the boy made no move to follow me. He just stared at me formlessly like he didn't understand. Or we could stay in the ball pit, I asked him. He nodded again, so I slipped back into the pool, balls scattering around me. After a while, I heard my mom calling my name, so I reluctantly dragged myself back out. It was nice playing with you, I told the boy. He said nothing, still giving me that blank, hollow look. I shrugged, running off to my mom and sister. Mom, I made a new friend, I told her, pointing towards the ball pit where the boy had been. But by the time we both turned around, he was already gone. The next time I saw him, I had just turned 8. I was getting a little old to be in the ball pit, but I still enjoyed playing with the ropes and slides in the play place. So I went over there by myself. There weren't many other kids playing there, and after a while, I found myself alone once again. I barely even heard him approach. It was more like a shift in the air, a tremble on the back of my neck. I turned around, and he was just there. He looked exactly the same as last time, the same blank, hollow look on his face, the same chalky, pale skin and sunken eyes. It's you again, I said, the nameless boy. He cocked his head and gave me a crooked smile, lacking any kind of warmth. I thought maybe I had upset him with the name, but he just shrugged. Wanna play? I asked, and he nodded. It was mostly me doing the playing and him just standing there, watching me blankly. But I felt guilty leaving him on his own, especially when he seemed so sad and lonely. My mom came to fetch me while I was trying to balance on one of the foam planks, the boy observing me from the shadows. Josh, it's time to go, she said, carrying my sister against her hip. All right, Mom, I said, turning back to the boy. Sorry, I gotta go now. Maybe I'll see you again. The boy said nothing, watching me go with those dark, sunken eyes. I left the play place and my mom gave me a weird look. Who were you talking to? She asked, and I shrugged. You won't tell me his name, was all I said before running to grab my coat. Every time we went to that McDonald's over the next few years, I saw him. Even when I got too old for the play area, I would see him standing in the ball pit, watching me across the room. No other kids interacted with him. Nobody seemed to even notice he was there. The weird thing was that he never aged either. While I grew taller and appeared older, he stayed the same, always with that blank, soulless look on his face. I didn't learn the truth until I was about 11. We went to McDonald's for lunch one day, and I was taking particular interest in all the old black and white photos and newspaper articles that were stuck to the wall and notice board. It seemed as though every piece of history that mentioned this particular branch of McDonald's was memorialized here. Then, I saw him. In an old, grainy photograph, attached to a newspaper article dated over a decade ago. My breath caught in my throat, and I stared at the article heading, struggling to make sense of what I was seeing. Boy dies tragically in the play area. The article went on to mourn the loss of Marcus, who had died after having a seizure in the ball pit and suffocating to death. By the time anyone had noticed he was missing, it was already too late, and they ended up pulling his lifeless body out of the ball pit where several other children hadn't even noticed his struggle. I looked again at the picture, but I knew without a doubt that it was him. The boy who I had been seeing for the past 4 years. A shiver touched the back of my neck. I turned around, my gaze finding his across the room. There he was, the nameless boy. A boy who had died here over 10 years ago. Without a word, he turned and walked over to the ball pit and slid down into the shadows where he had lost his life.
It all started when we got a new worker. We were a smaller branch of Subway on the corner of a busy junction, so we were often visited by businessmen and women heading to work and passing by on their lunch break. As such, we were often quite busy on the weekdays and needed a new sandwich artist to cope with the demand. At first, he seemed pretty normal. He hadn't had much experience in the catering industry, but he showed promising skill and a good work ethic and passed through the interview stages with flying colors. Although he was on the quieter side, he got along with us pretty well. The trouble began a few weeks after he started working. The first incident was only a minor thing. He messed up an order, which happened to the best of us. I fixed the order with an additional coupon to appease the customer and told him not to sweat it. Then, I started getting reports of rude and unprofessional behavior. I never noticed anything myself, but maybe I was just so busy with my own orders that I didn't pay too much attention to what he was doing. "I don't like that boy's attitude," a woman told me one day, while Xavier, the new employee, was on his break. "Very rude." I apologized to her, promising that I would speak to him about it, which seemed to satisfy her enough that she left without making any formal complaint. I wondered if he was having a bad day or something, but maybe I'll keep a closer eye on him throughout the afternoon shift. Like the woman said, his attitude was less than desirable. He spoke with a slurness more befitting of a teenage boy than a professional worker, and the sandwiches he was making were sloppy and unprofessional. I told him that he could take another break while I handled the rest of them now that the queue was dying down. He stomped off into the back without another word. With the help of my other coworker, Melissa, we served the rest of the customers until there was a lull, giving us a chance to take a breather. "Wonder what's up with him," Melissa said with a glance through the window of the staff room. "He's been like that all week." I shrugged, wondering if I should speak to him. I didn't want to overexert my authority, but his attitude was affecting our customer service standards, which wouldn't go down well with the higher-ups. "I don't know, I'm sure he's just feeling low about something. I'll talk to him," I told her, but I never did. I couldn't bring myself to approach him about it until a few days later, when things began to get worse. I worked at Subway for almost 6 years, but I'd never experienced anything like what happened next. I was working on a sandwich order to go when a customer inside the restaurant uttered a horrific shriek, standing up so suddenly that her chair went flying back. Silence fell heavily over the rest of the patrons as we all faced her, and I felt the unusual fluttering of anxiety in my stomach whenever something bad was going to happen. "There's a nail in my sandwich," she finally managed to say, her voice thick with disgust. "A dirty fingernail." This didn't immediately make sense to me. Everyone who worked at the front of the shop wore gloves while working, so there was no possibility of a nail breaking off and falling into the food. Even the kitchen workers in the back wore gloves, and our hygiene standards were incredibly high. Melissa was the one who managed to get a handle on the situation first, replacing the woman's sandwich and getting a fresh one, and offering her a coupon for a free meal. The woman's outburst already caused a ripple effect with the customers, and we saw some of them leaving. Once the situation had settled down somewhat, I took a look at the woman's discarded meal and confirmed that there was indeed a fingernail inside the sandwich. When I asked Melissa if she knew who made it, she immediately pointed to Xavier, who was watching it all with an amused smile on his face. "Xavier, can I speak to you for a moment?" I finally said, pulling him aside. "That sandwich, you made it, didn't you?" His expression narrowed at me, a ridge forming around his jaw. "Yeah, but I didn't put the nail in it," he said before I could accuse him of anything. It must have already been in the filling." I confirmed that he was wearing gloves, and even went as far as checking his nails, but they were all short and clean. I didn't have any evidence to prove that he might have done it on purpose somehow. I let him go, promising that if anything happened like this again, that I would arrange to meet with the bosses. We couldn't have a new employee bringing down our customer satisfaction and giving us a bad rep. That would have been very bad for business. The next week passed without any further incidents, and Xavier seemed to return back to normal, completing his work with the same gusto that he started out with. figuring it just might have been a bad spell. I let him get on with things and didn't raise any concern with the manager. Only, that wasn't the last of Xavier's strange behavior, and it was nothing compared to what was about to come. About a month into his employment at our subway, the worst happened. It was another busy weekday, with long queues and full tables. I was rushed off my feet, and I could feel sweat dribbling down my neck, making my uniform stick uncomfortably to my skin as I served customer after customer. The last thing we needed was a customer complaint. Even worse would be an accident. But that's what happened. A single scream was enough to slice through the murmurs of voices and completely silence the restaurant. Everyone froze, turning around. The scream gave way to another, and soon the clamor returned with gusto, voices overlapping in increased panic.
Oh my God! What the hell?
Somebody help!
Call an ambulance!
I dropped what I was doing and rushed out from behind the counter to see what was happening. A man was on his knees and in the middle of the restaurant, coughing up thick globs of blood into his hands. A woman, presumably his wife, was crouched by his side, screaming for someone to call for help. I rushed over to the couple, asking what happened, and the woman pointed to the sandwich sitting half-eaten on the table, blood splattered across the bread.
There was glass in there.
She half-sobbed, half-screeched.
Someone was trying to kill my husband.
Almost instinctively, my gaze turned to Xavier, who stood at the back of the crowd as a dark smile danced along his lips. Anger and horror bubbled inside my chest as I told someone to call the police, because I already knew this was no accident. Xavier had done it on purpose. It was only later that I found out what happened after we'd evacuated the restaurant. The man managed to make it to the hospital in time, but not without suffering serious internal bleeding. Xavier was arrested on the spot and charged with inflicting grievous bodily harm and possibly attempted murder. I will never know what was going on through that boy's head, but whatever he decided to put broken glass into the man's sandwich, I don't even think I want to know.